Hey, welcome back to That's Not Proper, and I'm your host, Corey Asuncion. Before we get started with today's episode, I just want to let all of my listeners know that this episode today is definitely an 18 and over episode. So if you have any little listening ears, I would send them on out of the room or pop in your earbuds. In addition to that, we're going to be talking about sexual content and some explicit languages used in the podcast. So send out those little listening ears, pop in the earbuds, have a glass of something fun to drink, and enjoy today's episode. My guest today, Angelique Luna, is a certified kink-aware professional, sex educator, and intuitive life coach who helps individuals and couples to gain confidence and better communicate about their sexual needs and desires. In addition, she and her husband, John, speak and teach at sex-positive conferences and together have the podcast, Sex Positive Me. Thank you so much, Angelique, for coming on today. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate this. I'm doing fantastic. And I hear you're doing very well surviving the fires out there.
Yes, we are surviving. Fires are a weird thing here because it's fire season, but this is the worst California's ever seen, especially in the Bay Area. So we're just battling the air quality, if anything, with all this heat. So it's kind of like you flying by the seat of our pants, which is pretty much the motto for 2020 anyhow. So of course, there's wildfires and weirdness. It's 2020, so I expect almost everything now.
You're totally living a sci-fi movie, okay? Once we heard the like firenados that was predicted in Sharknado a couple years ago, and the plague was predicted a couple years ago, we're just waiting to see what else sci-fi has predicted.
It's so funny you said that about the plague because I posted that on social media the other day and I was like, of course, the plague. What else? You know, we've forgotten about what were they called? The killer hornets. Everyone's forgotten that. Now we have the plague. I mean, come on. So, yeah, I guess I shouldn't be surprised by absolutely nothing. It's just I like to kind of guess. So now we're taking dibs here at home and figuring out, okay, what's the next most ridiculously crazy thing? Like, really, are there going to be zombies? There's actually got to be real zombies next. That's got to be the next level thing that we've got to, you know, be happening here shortly. Something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I love that meme. I was like, okay, who had firenados for 200? I'm just like, oh, yeah. God.
Just crazy. Oh, my goodness. So you're in Florida, right?
Yes, I am 3 miles away from Mickey Mouse's house. So it's been interesting not seeing the fireworks every night since March.
Oh wow, that's right. Are they even like allowing people into Disneyland? Do they have it? It is
through reservations, so it's kind of challenging for us because we're annual pass holders and we're so used to like, hey, we're just gonna run in, go get some dinner or just run a ride or something. Or, you know, as we're like hopefully not getting busted by Disney, we have a workshop called Toy Story, introducing Buzz and Woody into your bedroom. So we go and take pictures with the characters of Buzz and Woody.
Creative.
Exactly. We're trying to normalize a conversation that it's okay to have toys in your bedroom, you know? So that's what we go and we embrace the Disney lifestyle and we embrace talking about sex through food because that is the universal language, food. You know, my husband's Italian, I'm Mexican. It all boils down to, is it rice or is it pasta? What do we talk about?
I actually want to get to that because you called it the 31 flavors. And so I want to talk about that in a little bit because we are a food household. So when you said that to me the other day, I thought, oh my gosh, that makes absolute sense. And so there was something you said, but we'll get to that in a little bit. The first thing I wanted to talk about, though, just for my listeners and also for myself, what exactly is sex positive therapy?
Okay, sex positive therapy is finding a therapist or a mental health professional that understands and respects your sexual preferences. Oftentimes, what happens is we go to see a mental health therapist either for depression, anxiety, grief of loss, marital problems, and not finding someone who understands your lifestyle or your sexual preference is very challenging, because then you end up paying someone, say $200, $300 an hour, and then educating them about your lifestyle, and they're not helping you with the process of grieving the loss of someone, or judging you, saying, oh, you're fucked up. We can't, oops, can I swear? I'm sorry. It's like, I forgot to ask.
You absolutely can.
Okay. Trying to understand that your lifestyle choice shouldn't be hindered by, you know, not receiving the therapy that other, as we like to say, vanilla people are receiving. It's like, mm-hmm. you have to understand that, yes, this is our choice of our lifestyle, that we're practicing polyamory, we're swingers, we're BDSM and kink, but we still need all the other services as a normal heterosexual cisgender person needs. We just have mm-hmm. a different lifestyle. So it's trying to find those professionals that understand that, and you're not educating them, and they still have those qualifications to do that. I am not a licensed therapist, because a lot of the stuff that I teach, I cannot, because of ethics codes and licensing. Instead, I'm like, you know what? I'm doing a disservice if I do become a therapist, but that is my personal choice. There mm-hmm. are plenty of well-qualified sex positive therapists that are out there, even for sex positive families there to understand, to teach parents how to communicate better to their children, because we're raised in a society that we're shameful. Don't do that. That's bad. And
right.
we're trying to destigmatize it and normalize the conversation.
You actually have an interesting story as to why you got into this. Can you share a little bit about that?
Oh, I'm trying to do the Cliff Note version because it's such a long story.
Yeah.
But my daughter is a sex abuse survivor. Basically, the paternal grandfather and the paternal father knew about the abuse and was discovered through actually video of the local community pool. So we had to go through child services, and child services and the advocacy department mandated us to go through mental health therapy. And I'm like, I was demanding to go in there, and they're like, you're the first parent that actually requested to put their child in therapy. And I'm like, why? She went through a trauma. This should be it. It was like, well, most parents just prefer to hide it and not talk about it. I'm like, okay, red flag number one, that should have prepared me. So we were mandated to do individual, peer, and family therapy together. So my daughter did all three without any challenges. I unfortunately did have challenges because I am a bisexual swinger who has been in the lifestyle for about 25 years at this point. Mm-hmm. But they were trying to fix my identity. And I'm like, that's not what I'm here for. I'm here to grieve the loss mm-hmm. of my daughter's innocence. And you're too focused on trying to fix me for being a bisexual and then a swinger. And I'm like, no. So that's why sex positive therapy is very important. So once, after gone through five different therapists, I found the therapist who understood me and could help me grieve. And then the same process happened with the peer, but with the peer support group, I was very honest of my views and saying, hey, we need to prepare these children for middle school and high school because they're going to have sex again. So they have to be mentally and emotionally prepared. Because of my stance on that, they asked me to leave. So I was not welcome back into the group. And I was like, but we're supposed to support each other. We're supposed to be able mm-hmm. to talk about sex. And that's what made me realize that even parents and adults could not talk about sex to their partners, let alone their children. And someone mm-hmm. like myself, who was very confident and open, it's like, sex is good. It's pleasurable. It's not just to procreate. You know, we shouldn't be ashamed about that. And they're like, nope, we can't handle you. Nope. But I was like, I saw a couple of signs of the cross and holy water thrown at me. And I'm like, seriously?
Right. Wow.
So that's what created this journey to podcast and coach and serve the community to say, hey, it's okay what you're feeling. It's okay to be different. We all don't need to be liking vanilla flavor ice cream all the time. We could add sprinkles mm-hmm. and whipped cream and nuts and cherries, and let you know that there's a variety of different flavors, like Rocky Road ice cream, chocolate mint ice cream. So that's why we changed the dynamic, because then we're not as threatening, because people fear the unknown, and because different sexual relationships are unknown, and they're like, oh, it's taboo. And I'm like, no, once you know about it, you might like it. you gotta try it, right? You know, like food.
How long have you and your husband John been part of this lifestyle?
John has been for 12 years. Like I said, I'm in 25. I've just actually quoted myself. And we actually met in the swinger lifestyle. It was like a swinger meet and greet. And when we met, we just basically said, hey, I like this lifestyle. I'm not changing it. He likes it. The other challenges we do have is that we're both bisexual. So that's even a bigger taboo with him being a bisexual male. Everyone's like, oh no, No, we actually did a Pekasha Shah presentation, which is on my YouTube page. I'll put it up there, is talking about the challenges we have of being bisexual and how the stigma and people just are afraid. And then the judgment that you're too greedy, you're selfish, make up your mind, you're one way, you know, you're actually gay or lesbian. I'm like, no, it is chemically possible to be attracted to both sexes at the same time. It's nothing wrong with it. It's like you're liking apple pie at the same time you like cherry pie, but you feel like you're cheating on one of the pies there. And it's like, it's okay to like both. It's just a taste preference.
Now for your families, now you guys are pretty, obviously you guys go to and teach at conferences and you have the podcast. How does your family accept that with regards to your guys' lifestyles and how open it is?
At first it was very challenging. I know because both families are Catholics. So mine's is old school Mexican Catholic, his is Italian Catholic. And it was a challenge, but my parents were a little bit more accepting to it after, especially the trauma of the abuse and everything, that they understood that they needed to be educations. Sometimes John's family, well, it's a one-time thing. Okay. It's okay. And I'm like, it's not a one-time thing. This is how we are, but they have come to accept it because they're traditional. And the fact are you making money out of it? Yes. Okay. Then it's good.
Okay. Oh, how funny. Oh, that's pretty funny.
Oh, that's extremely hilarious. I'm like, as long as we're making funny, then it's okay. I was like, okay, fine.
So, well, and it's interesting because I think, and you know, would have a much better understanding of this than I would, but my personal experience with regards to sex and sexuality, and it's something that I'm coming to understand now, is that the church, religion, Catholicism, whichever, has a huge effect on how people, whatever, understand or look at it. And because of that, really powerful, because religion is very powerful, especially when you're talking about being raised up in it, and how it affects how you live your life, even if you want to live it differently. And so is that something that you deal with regards to, you know, the coaching that you do? Do you have a lot of people come in that have a religious background and are struggling with that?
We like to call it sometimes recovering Catholics. Because it is a lot of that stigma and shame of the control of religion, because I firmly believe mind, body, and spirit are connected. If one is off, everything is off. And that religion is organized by man. Spirituality is whatever you believe in. So you could still believe in your faith in God, the Catholicism and the religion, but also have a spiritual connection to your own body. That is your own temple. You take care of that because it is all connected. And it is trying to reprogram and deprogram people's mind and mentality of like what is right and what is wrong based on the religious point of views. Because we have so many different organized religions that it depends on which one you're looking at to see. It's like, okay, does this make sense? Does this make sense? Oh no, I'm going to hell because of I masturbated. And I'm like, no, if you look at, you know, Hinduism and Buddha and Tantra, we teach Tantra, which basically your body is your temple. And it is the flow of energy that has to heal with your body. And John is the logic science guy. I'm the woo-woo, you know, psychic. So having the two worlds collide at first was hard, but once he started studying Tantra and he saw that a lot of like the spiritual aspects of it, how they were talking about the chakras, also does relate to medical science together. Because then you see, it's like, okay, so I'm having dysfunction in my root chakra, which is essentially that is related to your sexual organs too, which are sacral. Then you're like, okay, well, that makes sense. So it is all connected. And trying to make people understand it's okay to still have your religious beliefs, but also remember you're a person yourself and believe and love yourself first.
Yes, that's interesting to talk about the chakra and things like that. My partner and I have become very into yoga. Mm-hmm. And so once you start delving into that and go beyond just, you know, having a practice and maybe gaining some understanding as to the history of it, you get into chakras and things like that. And so I knew what you're talking about when you're talking about root chakra. And it's very interesting to me because growing up, anything about with regards to yoga or chakras, things like that was, you know, considered like Satanism or something like that. But when you start to really pay attention to what it means and try and gain some understanding and kind of step out of that box of what religion has put you into, you kind of go, wait a second, this actually makes a whole lot of sense. You know, just very, even just literal, practical, logical sense, it makes sense to me. And, but you have to step outside of those boxes. And so it's the same thing applies to sex and sexuality with regards to stepping outside of these boxes. And this is something, you know, a journey I am on myself. And so with regards to some of the people that you coach or the conferences that you go to, what do you notice for those that are maybe newbies? They're little babies. They're the new vanillas. Okay. So they're wanting to step outside of these boxes that they've been placed into, but they're afraid.
Oh yes. The look of fear, we could smell it. I mean, we see them and we just try to say, hey, it's okay. It is like trying a new food. You take little samples, mm-hmm. bits and pieces, research it, research what's in it, you know, because you may have a peanut allergy, but you like the spinach sour dip so much, but don't realize it has peanuts and that's what's causing your reaction. So it's the same with sex and sexuality. Look into it, research. There's so much resources out there now, thank God, you know, with the internet and books and blogs and videos there, you know, find someone that you could trust and say, hey, can you give me some resources? And we're very quick to say, if I don't know it, let me find someone who can help you out there, who's more specialized, because I believe in sharing the information. I believe in supporting each other there, because I want everyone to have the most pleasurable sex possible, because it makes you feel good. It relieves those good hormones and endorphins, and it gets you mentally happy, you know, and that's what people don't associate sex and wellness together. Mm-hmm. They just think it's just the act. I'm like, no, there isn't. I mean, there's that nasty fun rumor that Sting and his wife goes 13 hours of having sex, but it is definitely the tantra, the meditation, being present in the moment, you know, and really taking care of oneself. And it's not something to be scared about. It's, you know, think about it when a kid tries to ride a bike the first time. How petrified are they to go on the bike because they're afraid they're going to fall or they're going to fail or scratch themselves? And it's like, but they still go back on and they still practice and they still go. The same thing is when you're exploring your sexuality. You might find something that you may like, oh, heck no, 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 no. It's like, stay away. But then you find something you do, but it is that exploratory time to try to find what is it that you like.
With regards to the people that you do help, do you notice it's more individuals or do you have couples come in as well?
We have an assortment of all. So it could be individuals who are trying to find a new way in the lifestyles. They don't know if they're really like kink or are they actually swinging. And then we have couples that are like, we're flatline. What do we do? And I'm like, okay,
right.
Where have you started the conversation? Have you started figuring out what you enjoy, what you don't want? Because oftentimes what we find is that they're afraid to communicate with each other. And I'm like, that's your best friend. That is your life partner. Mm-hmm. You're okay to talk about what you want from Olive Garden, but you're not okay to say, hey, I want to try this toy in bed. So it is trying to open those communications. That's why we have a workshop called Creating a Shame-Free Environment, where we kind of help chisel. I'm not saying we completely cure it, but it's help chisel to get you to talk about it. Like, we suggest that you talk to your parent, your partner, in regards to what pleasure you want to feel, not what you know, like, hey, you don't make me feel this, or you're not doing this right. No, no. You gotta like say, this is what I want to feel, because half the time some people are actually trying to please their partner, because then it in turn pleases them. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. But you have to have the communication skills to say, hey, I'm not enjoying this. Could we try this? Or when you're talking to them, you know, it might sound silly, but you said this, but this is what I heard. Saves a lot of miscommunications and a lot of distrust. It's like, maybe they're like, oh, well, that's not what I really meant. Okay, well, let's process and talk about it there. Mm-hmm. Because not everyone's a psychic, okay?
Right. Like yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, because I think that, well, communication, I think, across the board, no matter what it is a struggle that we have. I don't know if it's just an American thing or just a human society thing, but communication is an obvious issue across the board. But when it comes to sex, it's interesting because it should be something that we talk about a little bit more openly than, like you said, something, a food we choose at Olive Garden. And like we had mentioned earlier at the beginning of the podcast with the reference to the 31 flavors, and talk to me a little bit about that, because I was going to repeat what you had told me before, but I want you to talk to me a little bit about that. Because to me, what it did is it helped explain, maybe visually for myself what I can, a way that I can understand the differences in likes and dislikes. If you could explain a little bit about those 31 flavors.
Oh, absolutely there. Because like I said, everything's related to food. We, there's 31 flavors of Baskin-Robbins ice cream. So hopefully they don't copyright me and sue me for that. you go to an ice cream parlor and you see all these different flavors. Well, comes with sex and relationship, there is the ethical non-monogamy, which is the swinging, the polyamory, the open relationships. Then you have kink, which is the BDSM, power exchange, and fetishes. Those are like the mains that we address, and then sexual orientation and sexual gender and sexuality gender. So it is like a buffet, like a Sunday buffet, where you have vanilla, chocolate, strawberry, sprinkles, swirl, different things that you can pick and choose. There is no right or wrong way to have a relationship, as long as you have the communication skills with each other, you have established boundaries, you have established rules in order to have balance. And, as everyone keeps saying, there's no such thing as balance. There's always balance as long as you work on it. I always say relationships are like businesses. Whatever you put in, you want your return on your investment. So you have to put the work in. It's not a one and done. Okay, we got happily married, going down to church, and everything happens. I'm like, yeah, how many of us have done our wedding night in the dark, in missionary position, not even looking at the other person and not even saying this, not even a moan? We've done that. So, trying to explain that there is a variety of options and flavors of love and relationships and sexual activities that, society might say it's wrong, but I'm like, there is no right or wrong, as long as it makes you happy and it's safe, it's sane, and the best part, consensual.
Yes, I want to talk a little bit about that in a second too. I think one of my questions is, it makes me think back to years ago when my partner and I first met, and I am a lot more reserved, or was a lot more reserved than he was. So, talking about sex and, requesting things with regards to sex is not something I'd ever actually even considered. And so if you were to, let's say you're talking to, I know there's a lot of women out there that still feel the exact same way. They don't know what to say. They don't know where to begin. When you talk about these small little tiny steps, how do we, would someone, present that to their partner? Hey, I want to do this, if they're afraid.
Well, basically, it's putting it back on yourself. Like, I want to try this out. I would like to enjoy this. And oftentimes what we tell, if you find something that you want your partner to be involved with, do all the research and then give the research that you found to your partner. Give them time to digest. Don't give them like, okay, this is what we're going one and done. It was like, whoa. Then you really get the deer in the headlights and the, you know what? I think you're screwy and blah, 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 blah. But no, it is giving them time to digest and research and try it and explore. What sometimes we suggest is doing mutual masturbation with each other. So you are watching each other masturbate so you could see what is the Google Maps, Apple Maps of the body. It's like,
okay,
how
got it,
do
yeah.
you like things, how you enjoy it? Because, you know, you could have been with a partner that was great at doing, you know, oral sex and another partner that they flatlined. I'm like, what's wrong here? It's like, you should know these things. Everybody is different. Always remember that. Every single individual body shape sizes is different. So what one person may enjoy, another person may not. So it is, first off, primarily be comfortable with your own body. Know your own body and know that you have the confidence to tell your partner, this is what I like, this is what I enjoy. Because if you both confident in each other's bodies and know how to explain what you enjoy, your pleasure and sex goes skyrocketing through the roof, and then it is a mind, body, and spirit experience. And yes, you can have an orgasm like that.
I like how you relate it to self, because one thing that I think many people struggle with is if they were to present to their partner, hey, I want this different, or you're not doing this, it puts a pressure and almost as if they are failing or not good at something that they're doing in the bedroom. I think that a lot of people, I'm going to say myself, I know that presenting anything to my partner at times, it's you got to find the wording and I don't want to insult. And I think that that's a really big struggle, so that you bring it to self and say, hey, you know, this is something I really enjoy, or I would like to feel this way. I think that's great, because one of my biggest concerns would ever be to make my partner feel as though they are not sufficient.
Correct.
And I think that a lot of people, and this is purely a guess, I'm going to venture to guess it's more men than women. This, again, purely a guess. I don't know much about statistics with regards to this, but more men struggle with introducing things into the bedroom than a woman would necessarily, because, you know, the whole performance idea. I don't know. Is that accurate or not?
I've had it both 50-50, and also women like scared to, because then they feel like, you know, they're inadequate because they cannot do the same thing as, you know, a porn star or on the television. And I always have to remind them, it's like they're actors and actresses. Okay.
Right.
You are not about to give the keys to your 16-year-old child after they watch all 9 movies of the Fast and the Furious. That does not qualify them to get a driver's license. The same thing is with porn and sex. It's a great inspiration, but it is not a certification.
Yeah. The thing with porn too, I'm curious about your, point of view with regards to that. Porn with regards to the religious community is a big fat no-no. And so anybody that looks at porn, really anybody that looks at porn or is part of a kink lifestyle or is anything other than, you know, missionary position to procreate is considered a deviant. And so, you know, porn then comes up in those conversations. And in all honesty, it's something I've struggled with more, because I look at something like that and think, I don't look like that. I don't perform like that. I don't sound like that. Oh, and also, guess what? I'm probably not going to do that. You know, so the idea that porn may possibly give a wrong impression to some couples, I think that, you know, that's something I'd like to discuss, because I think that that would be my concern.
There's so many different options of porn. I always suggest it as an inspirational, not so much of like, you're going to do exactly what it is. It's like, no, because honestly, your brain is the largest sex organ you have. Read erotica, read a romance novel. That would stimulate you more. you know, than versus watching a porn video that you're like, okay, well, I'm disgusted on that. Well, okay, let's try something else, because there is ethical made porn. There is porn mm-hmm. made by real life couples that, you know, are all shapes, sizes, and, you know, different, even transgender folks there. I mean, there's a variety. It is a matter of going and searching. It's like, you know, you have Olive Garden, Buca di Beppo, Maggiano's as Italian restaurants, but all three of them might serve the same lasagna, but it all tastes different. Same goes mm-hmm. with porn. You just have to keep mm-hmm. looking and watching for whatever you are. If not, go to the books. The books would like entice you. That's why 50 Shades of Grey like skyrocketed, even though it was A, poorly written, B, had poorly bad facts about the BDSM community, but it aroused people and it ignited that fire and ignited that conversation. So that's why a lot of us in the industry consider it a blessing and a curse at the same time, but we're here to educate folks and get them into a healthy, safe environment that it might be bad in the organized religion groups to mm-hmm. watch this, but if it makes you feel good, what's bad about that?
It's funny you said that about 50 Shades of Grey. I remember I got the first book when it first came out, and I had only read the first one, and my kid, and I felt like I had to hide it from my kids. Well, honestly, they were young. I did have to hide it from them. They were like 7 years old. I didn't want them to pick up mom's book and be like, what is this? You know, but, I was nervous. I didn't want anybody to know because, again, growing up in organized religion, it's not something you do. But what it did for me was it helped. And I'm wondering if this is why it caused this boom of people, you know, looking into other things, is it's, it helped to almost normalize it.
Yeah.
It was like it made it okay. Hey, it's okay. Some, you know, there's a movie now and then there's these books and everyone's excited about it. And a lot of women were very into those books. They're starting to see. I'm wondering how many couples, partners and husbands and boyfriends and whatnot at home were like, oh, wait, this really helped me out in this, you know, in this arena. And so for if anything, for me, what I remember thinking when I read it, you know, because it was several years ago, was that I felt like, oh, it's okay to, you know, maybe delve a little bit deeper than where I had. Now, I'm personally not into, you know, BDSM or anything like that, but it gave it a normalization in my mind where it was like, okay, this is a little bit better. But it was funny because the religious community especially went on and on about how it was abusive and, you know, it wasn't. Yeah. And, you know, and that's the thing, is because then you don't want to talk about it to your girlfriends or things like that, because you're afraid that they're going to think these things, you know. And the same thing with porn. There's a lot of things going around right now. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out what I believe or what is or isn't true. You hear things with regards to Pornhub and sex trafficking and things like that. So you brought up ethical porn, and that's not really something I know too much about. I think recently I found one person on Instagram who is working in ethical porn. And I would love, by the way, if you happen to know some places for people to go look at, I'd love to get those links and put them in the show notes with regards to that for them.
Oh yeah, I'll definitely send you a link. Like, yeah, because I did not even think about to have prepared for our interview there. But ethical porn, it is, you know, a diversity of porn, and is more than, you know, okay, here's the action, that's it. It's like, no, they actually put thoughts and feelings, and putting, you know, all shapes and sizes, honestly. So,
okay.
And doing proper fair wages and really communicating. And I am a huge advocate for sex workers, because people who are saying, oh, it's all about sex trafficking and, you know, forcing, it's like, not really. It's like, we actually do contribute a lot into helping to fight the sex trafficking and fight the fact that, you know, sex work is work, because we do put like emotional commitment, physical attraction. And there's more to it into giving sexual pleasure to somebody, because some people are just like, I just need a physical touch. I need to be cuddled and held. I just need to have that emotional conversation. And sometimes it's not the physical intimate act that we all think of. It's like, oh, this is it. When it comes to sex trafficking, it's very difficult, because it, you know, people think that, you know, people are not getting into this voluntarily. No, a lot of it is consensual, and we do fight it. But what some people turn a blind eye, and this is where I get very angry, is that you're okay that Uncle Bob is sexually molesting your daughter, you won't report it because it's okay. It's normal. Happens a lot in organized religion that mm-hmm. we're like, we won't talk about it, but yet, oh, sex trafficking, some little kids being like, I'm like, can you not take care of your home first? I did not know mm-hmm. about what was happening to my daughter because I had 50-50 custody share with baby daddy. And that's what mm-hmm. angered me even more, that he knew about it, did not tell me about it, and normalized it. And I'm like, no, because if I knew that earlier, because it was discovered at the age of 8, I would have put a stop on it right away, because that's not healthy.
Right.
Sorry, I got on a tangent right there, but it is that.
No, that's okay. I think you're right, because, well, right now we're seeing this boom with regards to sex trafficking, child sex trafficking, and I am 100% on board for doing what we can. I do think it's interesting that it's all of a sudden, I'm sure there's some sort of political agenda, because November is coming here in a moment, because this has been an issue for many, 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 many years. You're not talking, I mean, Epstein, for crying out loud, how long ago was he doing what he was doing? And so now all of a sudden it's on the forefront. Again, very important, but I think we need to focus also on, hey, so many, and I don't have the statistics right now, but, you know, earlier in my podcast, I had done an episode on rape culture, and majority of children that are assaulted sexually, it is by someone that they know. It's someone near to them. It is, you know, there is sex trafficking, but a lot of these victims, the child victims, it's by someone they know near home, in the home. And we've got to make sure we're paying attention to those things as well when we're talking about, you know, the sex trafficking as well.
Right. And that's why we preach very much, especially in the sex education industry, is that the importance of the children to know sex education, of like their proper names of their body parts, the scientific names, mm-hmm. penis, vulva, vagina, so that way they can communicate, because oftentimes predators will not sexually assault a child there because they have that open communication with their parents. The parents right. should be the number one resource and go-to person to talk to, so that way they will not get, you know, sexual, because that's how they are. They're groomed. It's like, this is our little secret. Don't tell mom or dad. Don't tell your aunt. It's like, that's where a lot of people turn the blind eye. They'll right. focus on sex trafficking because, oh my God, that's so much more horrific. They're being sold into slavery. Yeah, because there's money being exchanged. But when it happens in your own household, why are we not fighting that?
Right.
I got a right. lot of friends who are social workers, and God bless them. They're going through a rough time because the cases have skyrocketed.
Especially because of COVID.
COVID, yep. Can do. But it is changing that dialogue. That is one of my missions, that sex is pleasurable, sex is okay. It's okay to mm-hmm. communicate. There's various different age-appropriate sex education. It is not just only the physical act. It is the mm-hmm. consent. It is the emotional intelligence. It is how to have healthy relationships. I mean, all reality, if we change the title of sex education to healthy relationships, boy, it will be in every school district everywhere. Because that is right. what we're teaching, how to communicate, how to ask for things, how to say no, establish boundaries. How many of us in organized religion have no boundaries because we were told not to have them?
Right. Exactly. No, I agree. That's interesting you say that about healthy relationships, because it 100% would be part of a curriculum. I mean, it could be. It's just, as soon as you add the word sex or sexuality, then you've got people in an uproar. And you know, we had talked previously a little bit too about the idea that the lack of communication that people have with regards to sex, the inability to speak about it, it kind of overflows into every aspect of life, because when you don't have the ability to communicate and have a healthy relationship, so let's call it that for a moment, instead mm-hmm. of sex, sex conversations or whatever. Right. It overflows then into everything else, because we also all know, just, you know, for lack of better words, if you haven't gotten any in a while and you're not being satisfied, you've got some pent up issues. Mm-hmm. I'm not just talking about blue balls. You know, I'm just saying, you know, you've got some you've got some issue, you've got some frustrations. And if you cannot communicate those things, that's only going to build up. And then it overflows into other aspects of your life, whether, you know, it could be, you know, marital relations, it could be work, it could be family, it could be now you're taking your frustrations out on your children. And as the communication continues to reduce and it becomes, there was a word you used earlier, you know, it was like it flatlines.
Yeah.
Then it only, everything only gets worse. You know?
Preach it.
Yeah. Well, and it's, here's the thing, is these are things I'm just learning. You know, I was raised in a, wasn't just the raising. I don't want to put all this burden on my parents or anything like that. It's just that organized religion and then carrying that on through adulthood because you, that's all you know. There is no discussion there. Almost, I would love it if churches started having, you know, open conversations about sex. Talk to your partner about sex, but that it's just so freaking taboo. But the thing is it's important. It's not just physical. And I think that those conversations in churches need to happen.
Well, I know a few progressive churches do that. They do bring in those conversations. They do teach children and youth about healthy relationships and boundaries there. So it is a 1%. I'm not saying totally, yeah. But it is definitely 1% that they are trying to have those conversations. But it is giving yourself permission to have those conversations. And that's the big thing that we always, in with our clientele, is like, give yourself permission to talk about it. Give yourself permission to feel it. You know, as corny and quirky that, you know, Legally Blonde, you know, it's like, you know, people who exercise have endorphins. Endorphins make people happy. Happy people don't kill people. So you got to think about it the same way when you have an orgasm. You release endorphins in there because how many of us are really going to be running that 2 mile to get that runner's high to feel it? Well, we're just like, hey, just, you know, self-pleasure yourself, grab yourself a toy and you can feel the same orgasm endorphins the same way.
So I have a question then with regards to, you know, safety with in the like BDSM and you talk about swinging and things like that. How do you safeguard yourself within those communities?
It is definitely knowing yourself, having your boundaries, and asking as many questions as you need and negotiate, you know, what is it that you want to participate and do, you know, because it is so many different things. For myself, I had neck surgery 2 years ago that they replaced 2 discs in my neck. So I have to disclaim that medical condition. I'm also a type 2 diabetic. So anytime I go into a play, I always say, okay, these are my medical conditions that you need to be aware of and where not to release. It is my philosophy, if everyone could take lessons from the BDSM community in regards to negotiation and safe play, this world will be a so much better place. Because there's so much we go over and we discuss and we go safeties and protocols and rituals, things to make sure that it is an enjoyable playtime. You know, it's sometimes I have to tell, it's like, you know how we as kids, we had a vivid imagination and we ran out and we play, and we talked about it. Well, guess what? You could do that again as an adult. Have a vivid imagination, play and talk about it and converse. And, you know, I tell people it's like a football game. Or any kind of sports. There's a pregame that you go over the stats, negotiations, what you're going to do, what you do. Then the actual game. And then you have a post-game wrap-up. Okay, what did you like? What happened? How do we do this better? That's the best way to think about any kind of sexual relationship you get, whether it be ethical non-monogamy or the power exchange or the kink. It's like you have to put it in that perspective that, hey, there's steps to this. It's not just like wham, bam, thank you, ma'am.
Okay. I love that you say that because I don't know anything about, you know, this culture, and which is one of the reasons why I brought you here. I want to normalize these things. I want to remove judgment from myself and from other people. But growing up, when you heard anything with regards to swingers or BDSM or anything like that in your mind, or at least the way it was portrayed to you, it was like you guys met up at some, you know, dive bar dungeon and y'all were just naked running around on top of each other. So I mean, I don't think I'm wrong. I think a lot of people assume that.
No. And no, so you're when, right. Yeah. You're right. It is absolutely.
I'm sure movies don't help. You know, movies make it like that. Everyone's just running around or, you know, you see photos and things like that.
The media, no, if the media doesn't help, but there are some few stuff that I sometimes do recommend, but it is not like that. There are swing clubs, there are dungeons there where you want to go, and you know, they will give you the rundown of everything that you will see or that will happen, but you don't have to participate. You don't need to nosedive into the group orgy right away or get like beaten and flogged or, you know, whatever, the nose clip pinch, you know, those clothes hanger pinchers things. Yeah, those things
on your the nipple pinchers. The nipple, or something?
The clothes pins back in the day when you hang your clothes on the laundry. Yeah, they use that too as torture devices too, or pleasure. I'm sorry, pleasure. I have to correct myself because I'm not yucking on anyone's yum. Whatever you choose, right, that's yours. So it is that, you know, false scare tactics the media puts it there, but. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes these communities are very welcoming. They're very understanding. Hey, if you're new, that's great. Always ask questions. Don't be scared to ask questions there. No one is going to think, oh, well, you're not allowed here or whatever. And it's like, no, these communities are very welcome. As long as you respect your boundaries, you respect others, and no means no, and that's perfectly okay. You don't have to sleep with everybody that you see, and you don't have to play and do everything there. You know, sometimes I always tell people, especially if they're going into the BDSM community, if someone's like, oh, well, I've been a dominant. And I'm like, you're only 25 years old. How are you a dominant? Where's your training? It's like, no. It's like, have you been a submissive before? No, I don't need to do. I'm like, then you don't know what it feels like. A good dominant is always someone who's been submissive, because then they know what it feels like, what's going through their minds. It is very much a psychological help too, because some people who have gone through trauma have gone through the BDSM community to help heal it. I'm not saying that's for everybody. I am saying some people, because it gives you that release in conquering your fears of what has happened there, but that you're in control. Everyone who enters into the BDS community is in control, because it is consensual and it is negotiated. So it's not just, oh, well, the dominant has full control. I'm like, no, submissive has a lot of control too, because they could say, hey, stop, I'm done. And that's where a lot of the media misconception thinking. So if you're the top, you're the dominant, you're always in control. And then it's like, it's a two-partner agreement.
It's very interesting to me. I have like 120 million questions. And just because, like I said, you know, growing up, you just assumed these crazy things were happening. And, you know, you had these pictures of this, you know, scary or deviant or, you know, somebody's being imprisoned in a sense. And so to hear you talk about it like that, I appreciate it, because it helps gain some understanding, and it makes sense to why someone would, you know, enjoy that too, to have these things negotiated and to, you know, be able to communicate. The idea of so much communication, I absolutely love, because even in very simplistic relationships, we don't have that. And so to hear this open communication is incredibly impressive to me. You know, out of curiosity, if someone is brand new to this and it's something they're considering and they're thinking, where would you suggest the first place they look? They're at home right now listening and they want to go type into their computer. Okay, I need to get some information. I'm curious about this. I want to go somewhere and experience this.
What part? There's so many different resources. I mean, you could come definitely to me for that, because then I could point you out to the right directions. I mean, there's a website called FetLife.com, all for the BDSM communities, and there's stories and blogs and photos. Just remember, a lot of stuff on that website is not for the faint of heart. So just remember, because you'll see some and you're just like, No, that's not going anywhere near me, but that is someone else's yum. We don't yuck on it. Always remember that. Don't yuck on that. So that's a good place there. There's also blogs and podcasts too, that you could go and research there. I think an upcoming one for swinging is Swingers Down Under, where they do, talk about all the different swinging lifestyles, conferences, their own personal journeys there. We try to be connected to every aspect of all the different types of lifestyles there are, because it is so much out there, honestly. Mm-hmm. To go down the rabbit hole, it took me a good like 3 years to scientifically and mental health therapy to go down that rabbit hole, and that even that blew my mind there.
I think what would be encouraging to hear, at least I'm encouraged, is for someone else who may be interested in this, is that they're not alone.
Oh, no, no.
You know, that, yeah. And I think that that's exciting, is that there's these communities being created. There's this openness, and, you know, the practice of destigmatizing these lifestyles is so important. And I, you know, I really, really appreciate you, and thank you for coming on today. But what I want for you to share with me right now is, where can my guests find you?
You can find me everywhere as Sex Positive Me on social media, and our website and podcast is sexpositiveme.com. We do have a lot of stories of individuals who tell about their lifestyles. So that is one of our goals. It's like, you're not alone. So we have a variety of different stories, from dungeon owners to individuals who don't have a platform. So check out our podcast and listen to it. And if you have any questions, always feel free to reach out to us on our social media.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Angelique, for coming on today. I really appreciate you.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate you very, very much.
Thank you for listening in to today's episode of That's Not Proper. If you are interested in checking out Angelique's website or her podcast or her Instagram, check out the show notes. I'm going to include all the links to those sites and social media sites in the show notes. And remember to come back next week for next week's episode of That's Not Proper.